Blog Talk Radio.
And now a brief message from our sponsor. Reality Books presents Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. The author is Marshall Washington Cabinus Abui, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, a message that will change America. Buy your copy today. $20 is all it costs, plus $5 postage and handling. To order your copy of the book written by the great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, send a text message. Include your full name and how many books you would like to purchase. Send to area code 706-399-5006. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A message that will change America. Send your text message, including your full name and how many books you would like to purchase, to area code 706-399-5006. A brief word from our sponsor, Reality Books, publisher of Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. A short extract from the book, Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution. God will not change the condition of a people until they change what is in themselves. In other words, until they change their way of thinking. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution is designed to help African Americans and other ethnicities change their way of thinking. This is a book that will change America, and it is on sale for only $20 plus $5 postage and handling. You can order your book now by sending a text message to area code 706-399-5006. Please put your name and the number of books that you would like to order, and you will be contacted to arrange payment information so that the book can be mailed to you immediately. So please go ahead and don't hesitate. Order your copy today. Booker T. Washington and the Black Revolution, published by Reality Books. The author of this book is the great-grandson, the senior great-grandson of Booker T. Washington, the founder of the famous Tuskegee Institute in Alabama, now known as Tuskegee University. The great-grandson of Booker T. Washington is inviting you to order his book. Send a text to area code 706-399-5006. The book is only $20 plus $5 postage and handling. Order your copy today. Thank you. Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Booker T. Washington Speaks, African American Family Room Forum. We are happy that you have joined us again on this Saturday evening as we get into the hopefully last part of the winter of 2021, beginning the year with a lot of things going on. But we want to go ahead and get into our topic in just a minute. But first of all, we'd like to ask our co-host, Mr. Pianki, who I want to welcome to the show, along with the others who have joined us. But we want to ask Ms. Pianki for a radio check. Ms. Pianki, are you able to hear me?
Yeah, you sound pretty well today. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you, sir. Thank you very much. We also want to welcome Jake John Cannon Bay and Brother Warren, who've both joined us tonight, and we'll be calling on you in just a minute. But I do want to announce to those who are listening via the internet, and we know because we are able every week to see the stats on the numbers of people that listen via the internet. We want to invite all of you who are listening tonight via the internet to please call in and let us hear your opinion. We have a topic we're going to begin the show with, but we don't have to stay on that topic. If there is something on your mind, you can call in and let us hear what's on your mind, and we'll talk about it. This is an African-American family room, and in this family room, we're free, as long as we are civil, respectful, and polite to each other, to talk about whatever's on our mind. The only other caveat that I have always had as we go into our fourth year on the show is please don't say anything seditious against the United States of America for lots of reasons, not the least of which is that I'm on the United States military's payroll and I don't want to lose my freedom or my pension because I allowed you to use this platform to commit sedition against our government. So those are the only two caveats that I've always had. One is that we be polite and civil to each other. We can disagree without being disagreeable, even though you may not respect or agree with what somebody's saying, respect the person. So having said all that, I do want to invite all of you who are listening, and that is directed towards those who are listening via the internet. Please call in if you would like to participate. The number is 657-383-0671, and I will repeat just in a few minutes. I know some of you are just getting settled in and you don't have a piece of paper, pen, or pencil nearby to write this number down. So in the next few minutes, if you think you might want to call in and you have had a chance to get something to write the number down, I will repeat it. So moving right along into the program for tonight, first of all, I want to say, you know, our prayers go out to everyone who's lost a family member, a relative, or a friend in the last few weeks or in the last year. Our prayers go out to you. Our prayers for your comfort and for God to give you consolation from your grief. I just saw the statistic today that in this last month, this is the first month of a new year, 90,000 people in this country have died from the COVID. And now we've got new strains, and they're not even sure if the vaccines that they worked so hard to get pushed out into the public arena, if they're going to even work for these new strains. About three different new strains out there. And then I just read a few minutes ago that some congressman who had been vaccinated recently has tested positive. So that begs the question, how effective is the vaccine for real? But these are things that we just have to do everything we can to follow whatever guidelines will help us stay safe. But that's not the topic. I just wanted to ask for your prayers for all those people who have people who are in danger of dying because they either can't get into the hospital to get the necessary treatment, or they're in the hospital and the treatment is just not going to save them. Okay, moving on, though, the topic that I've chosen us to start for us to start with tonight, and again, we can move away from it, but here's the topic. If it is proven, the key word here is if it is proven that a person who has served as an officer of the United States, an officer of the United States, and that includes people that have been elected to political offices as well as people who have accepted government appointments where they had to take an oath of office, like, for example, all the people that are commissioned officers and warrant officers in the United States Armed Forces, they're considered to be officers of the United States. And this also can include law enforcement personnel, because technically, even though they may be appointed by the governor of the local state, they also are required to enforce the laws of the United States. So in that sense, they're officers of the United States as well. But it says, if it is proven that a person who has served as an officer of the United States has incited an act of insurrection. Now, insurrection is a term I'm not going to go into details, but what it means is to rise up against. In other words, to rebel against the government of the United States. If it is proven that a person who has served as an officer of the United States has incited, to incite means to encourage, an act of insurrection against the United States, the government of the United States, should that person be allowed to serve again as an officer of the United States in keeping with the U.S. Constitution, the 14th Amendment, Section 3? Now, I'm going to just take a minute. It's not very long, and read that section so it'll be clear what the disqualification is. It says in the United States Constitution, 14th Amendment, Section 3, no person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elected president and vice president or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States. So civil is like police officers, military is like military officers, or any state under the United States or any state who, having previously taken oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer, and police officers are considered in this context to be judicial officers, the officers of the court. If they've taken an oath to support the Constitution of the United States, and they shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. And then there's a caveat at the end. And it says, but Congress may, by a vote of 2/3 of each house, remove such disability. So you got two issues here. One is a person that's been proven to have incited or committed an insurrection against the United States is disqualified from holding any other future office of the United States or any other state. But it also says that Congress, by a vote of 2/3 of each house, that's 2/3 in the Senate, 2/3 in the House of Representatives can remove this disability. But it is something that is out there. Now, I'm going to finish in just a second, but I want to say this. There were numerous people that have been identified. Some have even been arrested. Some of them are lawyers that are considered to be officers of the United States because they're legally entitled to practice under their license in front of the district courts of the United States, as well as their local state courts. And with special additional caveats, they can even practice before the Supreme Court. But any of these people, by virtue of their state license, can practice before the U.S. District Court. So in that sense, they're officers of the United States. There were lawyers. There's some of them right now still in jail that have done this. Okay, then you have military officers. Some of these were retired, but they're still considered to be part of the United States military. Still drawing a check from Uncle Sam, like myself, you know, who's retired. And you have police officers. And you had even some people that may have even been helping this insurrection by opening gates, letting people come in. Maybe they were sympathizers, maybe they were afraid, whatever. But if someone has been proven that they participated in the insurrection or incited the insurrection, according to this, they should not be allowed to hold future office unless Congress, both houses, vote by 2/3 majority for them to do it. Now, the question I'm asking our panel tonight and anyone who wants to call in, do you believe that if it's proven that some of these people, I'm specifically right now talking about the 6th of January, what happened up in the Houses of Congress, do you believe these people should be allowed to hold office in the future or continue to hold office? And that's not just people that barge in there, but that's anybody that incited them to do it. Okay, because we know that the information has come out, it's been picked up through social media and other ways that the FBI and other government agencies, the people have been passing traffic, as we call it in the military, passing messages back and forth, you know, social media, cell phone calls or whatever. And even people have been paying money for these people to go up to Congress to do what they did, to get in Congress to try to stop the vote count, inciting insurrection against the Congress. So there's a lot going on with this right now, and it's not going to die out in the next few weeks because these court cases are going to be going on for months. Some of these court cases are going to be going on for months. So I just want to see how we respond, how we feel to that. So, Ms. Bianchi, again, welcome to the show, my co-host. So what do you think about this issue?
Well, that's a law issue. It needs to be settled amongst lawyers and other people of concern.
So how do you feel about these insurrectionists or people inciting insurrection holding public office or state police roles or whatever roles that they are supposed to uphold the oath of allegiance to the Constitution? What do you think about these people being allowed to continue to serve?
Well, it depends on what the law says.
Well, I just read the law. Well,
it has to be interpretation of the law and how it's going to be applied. So if the people are found guilty of such things, and it says governments, which would include burning of police stations and taking siege of cities and so on and so on and so on. So if the law can be applied, then let it be.
Okay, well, that's a good answer. That's very straightforward. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Bianchi. I want to repeat your phone number again for those people that had to go get a piece of paper and something to write with. If you want to call in and participate, the number is, let me call this number out, and then I will go back. The number is 657-383-0671. Again, 657-383-0671. Okay, Ms. Bianchi, we're going to come back to you, but did you have something you want to add to that?
Did I want to add something to it? No, not right now, don't.
Okay, thank you, Ms. Bianchi. So we're going to move around the family room. I see Dr. Novus has just joined us, so welcome, Dr. Novus. And I don't know if you heard the topic, but I will read it again because there may be others that just came on via the internet. So the topic for tonight is, if it is proven that a person who has served as an officer of the United States has incited an act of insurrection against the government of the United States, should that person, if it's proven that they did this, incited an act of insurrection against the United States, should that person be allowed to serve again as an officer of the United States in keeping with the U.S. Constitution, 14th Amendment, Section 3? And when we say officer of the United States, we mean anybody that's been appointed to an office to enforce the laws of the United States. So that could be a local policeman, okay? It could be a lawyer. It could be a judge. It could be a military officer. It could be a person elected to political office. Anyone that had to take that oath swearing allegiance to the Constitution of the United States. So if it's been proven that that person who has served as an officer of the United States has incited an act of insurrection against the United States, should that person be allowed to serve again as an officer of the United States in keeping with the U.S. Constitution, 14th Amendment, Section 3? And I'll just quickly read that particular amendment section. In the 14th Amendment, it says, no person shall be a senator or representative in Congress or elector of president and vice president or hold any office, civil or military, under the United States or under any state, who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress or as an officer of the United States or as a member of any state legislature or as an executive or judicial officer of any state, and this includes police officers as well, people in the National Guard, people in the U.S. Armed Forces, to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. And then there's the caveat that, but Congress may, by a vote of 2/3 of each house, remove such disability. That's 2/3 in the Senate, 2/3 in the House of Representatives. So I wanted to make sure that anyone who just joined us heard that. And also, again, want to welcome Dr. Nobles, and we'll be calling on you for your input in just a minute. We're going to move around the table, and the next person in our virtual family room is Sheikh John Kennebay. So, Sheikh John Kennebay, what do you think about that?
First of all, I'd like to say good afternoon, good evening, everyone.
Good evening.
I sort of have mentioned we should go backwards to understand what occurred. And when I say backwards, I'm talking about going back to when the United States of America was so divided that it ended up being a war. And there's some things that took place during and after that pushed the ball or the can down the road. The Constitution was amended, the 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendment. Well, the commander-in-chief had been assassinated, and then his second-in-command became the commander-in-chief, and a conspiracy began, according to Jonathan A. Logan in his book, The Great Conspiracy. But the 14th Amendment, the 13th Amendment, really had to do with the changing the condition of the slaves, people who were slaves, to free people. Of course, that was rolled back. What I mean by that was rolled back, because that's part of the conspiracy designed to do that, was that the 13th Amendment had 20 sections in it. The 13th Amendment was pulled back. When it was reissued, it was stripped of 18 sections, only two. So they had to do something to the 13th to get to the 14th. Now, the 14th Amendment dealt with the insurrectionists, if I should use that term. What I mean by that is that there was a group of citizens of the United States of America rose up and fought against the United States of America, and they lost. When they lost, they were actually not citizens anymore of this country. And that had to be addressed. When that was addressed, that was part of what I said, causing them to kick the can down the road. they was brought in, I'm going to say, by great compromise, brought back into the Constitution of the United States of America. They were not citizens. They were men and women that was without a country because they fought and said that they did not want to be part of the United States of America anymore. So the Constitution was amended in such a way that that it was able to allow, I'll use the word, the back door, some of the insurrectionists through the back door back into this country. And they have caused havoc and festered until this day. They have the same, I don't want to use the word personality, but it's more of the same. It's more of the ones that the insurrectionists of the Civil War is taking place now through their descendants. So it was treasonous then, and it's treasonous now. Now, whether the can going to be kicked down the road that required to rid the people who really don't want to be a part of this country, really don't respect the custom of the United States of America, to find a way of eradicating, cleaning up that situation. So that's what we're dealing with today. I sort of summarized it, but the big picture I'm trying to point is that it's a situation that's festered because it wasn't handled properly back in 1865 going forward.
Okay, Sheikh John Kennedy, before we turn it over to Brother One, I do want to ask you a really direct question. Do you believe that people in that category who have been part of an insurrection or incited an insurrection in the current events should be allowed to continue to hold office of trust in the United States or any state within the United States, or this includes police departments, National Guard, the judicial, legal profession where they have to take oath to support the United States Constitution, or even the United States Armed Forces, or any political office where you're elected and have to take oath of office? Do you believe that anybody who was involved in the recent insurrection activities up at the Congress should be allowed to continue to hold office or to be able to resume or come back into an office if they've left that office?
I think if the law should be enforced, which they call extradition, they extradite. There are a lot of citizens that have occurred to. They have committed crime, and they've been sent back to their country of origin. So that's a law that should apply. It does apply, but for some reason there's an exception. So I think those people should be expedited back to their country of origin.
Well, you know, these people, to the best of my knowledge, I don't know, there may be some alien, you know, citizens, but those people that invaded the Congress and committed the act of insurrection to try to stop a government process of certifying the Democratic election, which is considered by the House of Representatives anyway to have been an act of insurrection, and they acted as the what we would call in a local, state, or county, proceeding as the grand jury, which is the grand jury's authority to prefer to decide upon and prefer charges, which they did. And so they did, you know, say that insurrection did occur. It's not a question. I mean, legally, that is on the books. Insurrection did occur. And the question is that anybody that incited it or participated in it, should they be barred from holding office? And there were a lot of police officers that were in civilian clothes, from what I understand. I won't say a lot, but there were some. There were some military, retired, and active duty, even military people up there, all involved in this insurrection. Now, I'm not talking about the people that were just out there on the street, in the background, that was just over there in the scene at the scene. I'm talking about the people that actually broke the law, went past the barriers where the police are set up, pushed and even attacked the police, broke windows and went in there, and then went into these congressmen's offices and did all of the things they did to try to, even some of them, from what I understand, wanted to steal the electoral certificates. And that was, again, another act of serious insurrection. We want to stop the process of the free and elected government certification. So these people, according to Congress, committed an act of insurrection. So should these police officers, even lawyers who are officers of the court to take an oath to defend the Constitution of the United States, military officials, etc., should they be allowed to continue to hold office of trust? Should they be allowed, if they have left that office, to come back into an office? So that was the direct question.
I'm going to restate what I said. Right now, there are individuals that have committed crime. They have been deported to countries that they have never been to before, but they de-sentence are from there. I'm saying the laws on the book to do that right now, I'm saying it should apply. If that applied, those insurrectionists, they will end back in their country of origin. You will not have to deal with that anymore. You're dealing with because they're descendants. The children of those descendants, they are here with that behavior is rising up. So it needs to be rooted out. I said kicking it down the road. And that's what we're talking about, kicking it down the road. They enforce the law to fullness to some people, but it should apply to all people alike. Again, there are people who was born and raised in this country here. They have come in the situation with the law that determined they broke the law. Some of them have served their time. After they were released out of prison, they were deported to these countries that are their forefathers. They descended. I'm saying laws are on the book now. Enforce those laws. Don't have to pass any new laws. Just enforce the ones that are on the book. I think that we've looked over it to apply it to some people and not apply it to others. Apply the law equally.
Okay. Well, very good. Thank you, Brother Sheikh John Kennebay. Brother Warren, welcome to the show. And what do you think? You've heard some conversation by Ms. Bianchi, by Sheikh John Kennebay, and by myself. You heard me actually read the section from the 14th Amendment, the actual law that's been on the books ever since 1865 or somewhere in that time frame. And now we see an incident where this is being really considered to be applied because of the insurrection on January 6th. What do you think?
Well, greetings, Mr. Washington. I'm so happy. I had a good week this week. I am one of the persons who cashed in on some of that GameStop stock this week, so I'm just excited. I'm going to give you my answer to your question. I just saw something here. We have the Louisiana Weekly. That's our local black newspaper, been around since 1925, and the new issues come out on Saturdays. And one of the feature articles is about historically black colleges, universities, and it's just this one little part. It says, according to the U.S. Department of Education, HBCUs have educated 75% of all black people holding doctorate degrees, 75% of all black officers in the armed forces, and 80% of all black federal judges. So I just wanted to throw that out there, since they have a lot of black people who spend their time during the course of the week downing black people and black institutions. Now, to get to your topic, let us put this in proper context. These people who committed this seditious act, this insurrection, did it in the name of being conservative Republican voters who support Trump. At a joint session of Congress, while with the vice president presiding, following their constitutional duties of certifying electoral college votes. It has nothing to do with Jesse Jackson. It got nothing to do with Al Sharpton. It got nothing to do with Black Lives Matter. It got nothing to do with Antifa. It got nothing to do with Burnout Police Station and some other city. This was the mother of all riots here. That hurts conservatives. They're embarrassed by that. They're playing the victim. They're saying when you bring it up, you're dividing the country. They're trying to run with their tails between their legs. This was done in the name of conservatism, republicanism. There are black people, Black Panthers, still in jail, set up by the FBI, serving hard time in federal prison, many in exile. And these privileged white people, these victimhood white people, they play victimhood, taking upon themselves to harm people and to destroy property at the halls of the most sacred base of power in the United States government, claiming that they are more patriotic, they're more knowledgeable about the Constitution than anyone else. Not only should they not serve office again, but it should be considered whether or not they'll be executed. Like the woman from Georgia, the Republican woman in Georgia, Congresswoman, who implies that Nancy Pelosi should be executed. And also the two senators, Hawley and Ted Cruz, who participated in inciting this, should be investigated, expelled from their Senate seat. And the racist woman from Georgia, the Republican conservative racist QAnon woman from Georgia, should also be expelled from Congress because they are a part of this mess too. This is a Republican mess. This is a conservative mess. This is a pro-Trump mess. Has nothing to do with Jesse Jackson, nothing to do with Al Sharpton, nothing to do with Tawana Brawley, nothing to do with Black Lives Matter, nothing to do with burning down the police station and all the other diversionary stuff that many of these hypocritical, self-conflicted, many of them opioid-using, conservative-supported Trump lovers are saying to avoid the fact that all these people you name, Mr. Washington, lawyers, military personnel, doctors, they all wasn't just the trailer trash we talk about so often. They were the professional white supremacists who went in there and did it proudly and really believed that what they were doing was some constitutional thing. This is what they talk about. You're to be a part of the conversation, Mr. Ward. This is what they talk about all the time. That they know more about the Constitution, and you just read the Constitution, Mr. Washington. You would think that they would have read that. You would think that they would understand that. But no, they believe they know more about the Constitution than anybody else. That's how dumb these people are. So not only should they never serve office, but also the ones who are sitting in office who were not exactly on the scene, but instigated it and encouraged it, should be hunted down like wild animals and locked in prison and be executed. Thank you, Mr. Washington.
Thank you. In just a second, I'm going to bring on Dr. Nobles. Welcome again, Dr. Nobles. But I do want to announce the number again for those who are listening via the internet. We've got a little more than 20 minutes left on the show, so I want to give them, those who are listening via the internet, a chance to chime in. The number to call in is 657-383-0671. I just want to, before I bring on Dr. Nobles, I just want to expand on something. You know, at one point in my military career, I served on a ship that had a tremendous attack and defense capability. Won't mention the name of the ship, and I won't mention the specific type of ship. Just suffice it to say that this was a powerful arm of the United States military defense posture. Now, because of the fact that I had the type of job and access to different compartments of the ship, had I been a traitor, had I been a saboteur, I could have worked my way, especially with my rank, into certain spaces and committed great damage to some very important equipment that would have kept the United States from being able to perform a mission via this particular platform, this particular ship. All right. And if someone had paid me to do it or encouraged me to do it, or if someone had financed me to be able to go somewhere to get some type of tool to help me to do it. See, not only me, but all of those people that conspired with me that were involved in this particular attack, whether it was successful or not, would be liable, could be prosecuted in terms of this particular act of treason and sabotage, conspiring to commit an act of sedition or treason or sabotage against the United States military. So the reason I brought that up is because of the fact that no resources would have been sacrificed by the Defense Intelligence Agency, the FBI, and a number of other what we call alphabet agencies to bring everybody associated with this plot to justice. And they would not have said, well, 3 years has gone by, we are going to just drop it. The cases, you know, there might be a couple of other saboteur conspiracy members. No, that would remain open case. And a person might think they have gotten away 10 years from now. And lo and behold, they might be on vacation down in the Caribbean on one of those beautiful islands down there that I visited. And all of a sudden, there's a knock, or maybe not even a knock, on their hotel room. And there's some agents that have been sent over there once they were found out to be there to arrest them, to transport them. And they would end up in the Supermax out in Colorado, perhaps, until they had a trial. Because they can detain people for an indefinite amount of time if they have been shown by evidence to have been a treason or traitor against the United States. Now, the law of the Patriot Act says 72 hours, but there are caveats. They can hold them longer than that if they feel they need to keep them from getting away or going ahead and committing some other sabotage somewhere. So what I'm saying is now we have all these people floating around that went back home, went this place and that place, who think they have gotten away. But they haven't gotten away. You know, the Department of Defense is looking at those military officers, active and retired. The VA has a police agency, intelligence agency, that is looking at those veterans that may not be getting a retirement check, but they're getting VA benefits. So the question that I'm asking, of course, is Dr. Novus' time to answer, is this is out to everybody who may be wanting to call in. Do you believe that these people, once it's been proven that they participated or incited or part of this insurrection, should be allowed to hold any kind of office under the United States? Dr. Novus, welcome again. And what do you think?
Good evening, everyone. And I keep my answer brief. Absolutely. Law of the plot, prosecuted to the mice and the mice.
And I'm just add this last part. So you believe that, let's say they get prosecuted, let's say they get 5 years or whatever the sentence might be, that they should be able to come back and run for office and be elected to a office of trust under the United States government, even if they get prosecuted and punished?
Absolutely not. I think once you get prosecuted for this particular incident that you can't run for any public office or serve anywhere where you've taken an oath of office.
Absolutely. So we have all expressed our concerns and our opinions. I certainly don't believe it should ever be allowed to hold an office of trust under the United States or any state in the United States, including the local dog catcher. I'm just being facetious with that.
Yeah.
No, we're coming back to you.
Back around?
Yeah, we're going back around for the wrap up because we got 15 minutes left, so everybody have a chance. And you're going to have the last word anyway, but I just want to say my part because I hadn't given my opinion. I'd ask everybody else for that. So let me say mine, and then we'll go back around, start with you and end it with you. But yeah, I don't believe they should hold any office from the President of the United States down to the local dog catcher, which I'm just being facetious about the local dog catcher, but it sure they should not hold any police or judicial offices in the state, county, or in the United States because of that, what we just covered, that constitutional amendment. They shouldn't. But now, finally, let me just say this, and then we'll go around again. The law does say, the Constitution does say, the disability of being unable to hold office can be removed by a two-thirds vote in either of the House of Congress, in the Senate. And, of course, two-thirds, a majority of 66 or 67 votes. 67, I believe, for the, let's see. Now, that's a majority. I think one over half is a plurality, if I'm not mistaken. So it has to be a strong vote in the Senate and in the Congress for this person to still be able to hold office, which then it becomes a political issue. Now, the local police chief or the local policeman that was up there, and I don't know if it was a police chief, but we know some policemen up there that did that. Congress is not going to bring that up in Congress. You know, they'd have to get some kind of special waiver, but I'm just saying that I don't think that these people can be trusted if they were to do that to serve in any office, and that includes lawyers, it includes police officers, it includes judges. Anybody has to take an oath to defend the Constitution. They should not be trusted again. And if they are in still in uniform, they should be dishonorably discharged, in my opinion, from the military. So we're going to go around one more time. Ms. Bianchi, I'm turning it back over to you.
Well, you know, in the L.A. riots back in 1992, George H.W. Bush declared the Insurrection Act against all those people that was out there burning up, and especially the vile act that they'd done to the Koreans. Koreans in that area, their family descendants should receive reparations for that from the people that caused the problems and harmed and destroyed their problems. The Chicago riot in 1968, I think we remember those. Lyndon B. Johnson declared the Insurrection Act. The people that was incurred to destroying property and so on, in that act, they should be prosecuted, and it still exists if we want to go by that. I remember Gail Sayers was called out with the Illinois militia to take part in bringing it down. In 68, Lyndon B. Johnson again enforced the Insurrection Act with the riots in Washington, D.C. And he did it again in 67 with the Detroit riots. So they're still, if that wants to be done, there's still laws on the book, and there's incidents that people have participated in that the Insurrection Act of 1807 should be applied to. And some of those folks you can still find them today. Another point. The Missouri Constitution of 1875, Article 2, Section 1, it says, Section 3, that is, powers of the people over internal affairs, constitution, and form of government, that the people of this state have the inherent, sole, exclusive right to regulate the internal government and police thereof, and to alter and abolish their constitution and form of government whenever they may deem it necessary to their safety and happiness. Now, that gives the people of Missouri, and I'm sure the same would exist in other states too, and I know it does in the southern states, because Missouri was a southern state, basically. They got the right to overthrow, they get rid of their government. Getting rid of can be labeled as being anything if they wanted to say it, wanted to label it that way. So the federal government and the separation of powers with that of the state government is two different things. Washington, D.C. isn't a state, by the way. Now, I'm against anybody using violence because there's been many cases of violence that's been done there at the Capitol building, from the bomb that was placed outside the Senate chambers to the people who shot and killed two Capitol police looking for Tom DeLay. And I think his son is serving in Congress today. Going back to the those Puerto Ricans who was against Puerto Rican becoming the 51st state. They was separatists. So it goes back a long time. And yes, if somebody, not only at what you seen back in November the 6th, but it should be applied, and I think it is going to be applied. I think this president we have today, Joe Biden, is wanting to put something like that into effect. I hope Biden be just as rough and tough as he was back in 1994 with criminal activity that goes on in our city. People don't want to live under that. It just terrorizes them. It needs to be stopped. And I think it should be applied in some of these school settings too. 60 Minutes done a piece called American Disgrace on a school in Detroit. And the things that was going on there is, in fact, a disgrace. So laws should be applied. They should be stiff. This idea of letting felons go, I don't think they should be. I think they should serve their time because the victim themselves are never asked a question. What do you think about this or what do you think about that? I think the state's got a right also to control who votes. If there's stipulation that if you ever committed a crime against the state, that the state got a right to impose what it takes for you to regain your a full dutiful citizenship. And I think that's the way it should be. And I was going to make mention to Mr. Bay, those states voted to join the union and they voted to leave. That's what the people wanted to do. The same way that the settlers that settled the territory, the Republic of Texas, the territory of Texas, they voted to secede from Mexico, thus causing the Mexican-American War. And Calvin, I had an opportunity to watch Glover as the as their ship, where was it, Spaceship X, docked with the U.S., and I guess you can say the International Space Station. And it was really, really wonderful to see that activity. And, man, he was really happy. You know, we always talk about black first. We can say with him, the first black American astronaut who wasn't sagging. But he was really dressed nice. He looked good. And he got in there and done his position. Thanks a lot.
Okay, well, thank you very much. We're going to go ahead and get ready to wrap up, so we're going to go around this last time. So, Brother Sheikh John Kenan Bay, would you like to add more to your original comments, expand on what you said? John Kenan Bay, have you?
Yes.
Are you there?
I was saying that. Yeah, I'm here. I was saying that, you know, in engaging a war, there are rules and regulations governing that. So what I'm saying is that they just weren't carried out or followed after the Civil War. And one reason it wasn't because there was a conspiracy and assassination, and it manifested in the maximum during, I think, William B. Hayes, when they compromised the campaign for the office to get certain people's support. They pulled the troops out of the South. And for our people, that was, I don't want to say hell, but the terror that took place and the lack of citizens to stand up to make sure the lawlessness didn't continue. They were complicit in it. I think that, as I said, kicking the ball down, the can down the road, I don't think it occurred in Germany when Hitler was defeated, or other countries, you root out the source of the people that have that type insurrection behavior. If you allow them to continue, expect the seed of them, and this is what we got. This is what we have here. It's a serious issue, to be honest with you. A lot of people's lives are threatened. In fact, a lot of people's lives are threatened before this. A lot of people, when they get in automobiles, go to commit, wherever they go, their lives are there's a fear. There's a possibility of them losing their lives, but at the hands of people that should have been dealt with back in that time. And I'm saying it wasn't. So I'm saying that, but their laws that they got now, they to deal with people who, let's say, come from a part of America, America's, when I say America's, I'm talking about Mexico and South America, when they decide to come here, they have laws that expel them quickly and fastly. I'm just saying they should be applied. They all applied. You wouldn't have the situation you have now. That is my opinion.
Okay, Sheikh John Kimbe, we thank you for that opinion. We appreciate that. So, Brother Warren, would you like to add to what you said before? Would you like to comment on what you've heard or expand on anything that's been said?
Yeah, I think that when it comes to January 6, 2021, it must be remembered that it was people who professed to be Republican voters, conservative Trump supporters, who stormed into the Capitol during a joint session of Congress, presided over by the vice president, while they were doing their constitutional duty. They went in to stop the process. They went in to harm and kill people. They went in to steal stuff. No other incident that's brought up can be compared to that. And I think that when people do that, they are running away from that stanky doo-doo that's in their face. And they project onto other people all other kind of stuff. So we should never let these people who do not want to face that bring up any other situation, because there's no comparison. There's no comparison to it. To bring up Chicago riots, how many were armed service people that participated in all that? To bring up the LA riot, how does that stick with the topic that Mr. Washington brought up about those who were sworn duty to office and served public office? That's the issue there. But because the truth of what happened was for the whole world to see and continue to see it unravel, instigated from the sitting president, really, really causes great problems in what you call cognitive dissonance in these people. You know, Texas belonged to Mexico. Those white people just decided to go fight against Mexico. You know, Mexico had ended slavery, approximately 1820, they ended slavery. But those white people came in and wanted to expand on slavery. They wanted the right to have slaves in Texas. That was the territory of a sovereign nation, Mexico, who outlawed slavery. So I think that fact needs to be told. And you know, Mr. Washington, there's a lot of studies done on maroon communities in the United States. The sister out of the Schomburg Center there in New York did a book looking at maroon communities in the United States. You know, that is black people who lived on the outskirts of the plantation or even further into the swamps. And what was pointed out was that they could have not survived without the support from those blacks on the plantation. The blacks on the plantation would do things like kill an animal and dress it and leave it out at night for the people that were maroons. And one of the things she pointed out that was frowned upon was ratting, telling on other black people. It was frowned upon highly. And she listed some incidents, according to eyewitness accounts, where some of these maroons would come in from the swamp in broad daylight and shoot the snitch right there in broad daylight and get on their horses and go out. And there was one incident she cited how the maroons came back on the plantation and went to the kitchen area, one of these slaves who ratted to the white people because they believed in him so much, and blew his brain out right there. It's called Slavery's Exiles, America's Maroon. Beautiful book about the maroon communities that's least often talked about, the Great Dismal Swamp that goes between Virginia and North Carolina, where black people were living there till they were black people had never even seen a white person. And they would come out only at night. And when they come out in the daytime and the sun hit their eyes, it would blind them. That's freedom. You see, that's the real story for freedom in America. The black people's story is the real story for freedom. And when slavery ended and how black people were walking the roads looking for their family members who were sold to different places and paid money to put out ads. Have you seen my sister? She was last on this place. That's freedom. Our story, and I say this boldly, is the perfect case study of looking at people who really wanted freedom. But these white privileged people who went to the Capitol off of a lie that the election was stolen, pretending like they're victims. And of course, unfortunately, you got some black people, like they had those on the plantation, who right there with them, feeding them, giving them water, making them feel good about their racist behavior towards other blacks. Oh, I wish the old maroons would come back and do justice to those rats there. That's just my viewpoint. Thank you so much, Mr. Washington. What a great topic.
Okay, well, thank you, Brother Warren. And we're going to wrap up. Next will be Brother Dr. Calvin Nobles, and then our final closeout by co-host Ms. Piak. But before I bring on Brother Dr. Calvin Nobles, I do want to mention one thing, and that is to those who are listening via the Internet. For the last 3 years, actually, this is the beginning of our fourth year doing this program, and we do have all of the shows going back to the very first one 3 years ago archived. And you can actually have access to these. It doesn't cost you anything. You can download the shows for free. Just go up to Blog Talk Radio, Booker T. Washington Speaks. Just put in your Google search, put in Blog Talk Radio and Booker T. Washington Speaks, and it'll take you to the website where all of the shows for the last 3 years will be there. And just as you heard some very good information from our panelists tonight, you will hear not only the panelists that are present tonight, but others who've come on the show during the last 3 years. We've had professional people. We've had people in many different walks of life. We've had a number of educators. We've had at one point in time, we had the former mayor of my hometown, Tuskegee, Alabama, Mayor Johnny Ford, was interviewed on the show. We just had a lot of wealth of information that's been disseminated on this show that much of that information, I would say 99% of it, is still very current. And so you can learn from what our participants have discussed. It's like what we just learned about the Maroons off the coast of Georgia, off the coast of South Carolina, off the coast of Mobile, Alabama, or in the swamps up there, the Great Dismal Swamp up there. I lived in Virginia for 3 years while I was stationed up there in the Navy, so I was familiar with that history up there. In fact, I even became a close friend of the great-grandson of Nat Turner. This brother's passed on now. But there's such a wealth of information that's available that if one wants to get access to it, all they have to do, and it's free, is go to Blog Talk Radio, Booker T. Washington Speaks, do a Google search, and you have access to all of these shows with all of the participants and all the information they brought. So moving on as we get ready to close. So Dr. Nobles, you've heard a lot. We definitely appreciate your participation. Do you have any expanding ideas or comments or anything else you would like to add?
I'm trying to make a couple comments. First, I want to say that we must get this right and we must do the right thing, because this is going to set a precedent of what's going to happen in the future. We know that the government is already saying we need to be watchful and mindful for future extremist event that occurred on January 6th to occur again in the United States. And so the lawmakers and the courts and the FBI all need to get this right. And this is not about, you know, they didn't mean it. It's not a, it's about a time of empathy. This is a time about courting and maintaining our democracy. And we have people in positions that need to do the right thing. And we know those that some of those people in position are not going to do the right thing because they're going to make this about politics. And we need to take politics aside from it and look at the criminal element of this and do the right thing. And this is going to send a message to America on where we really are. Most of us already know, but it's going to send another message on where we are. And the reason I've been so brief on this subject tonight is because, to me, it is a clear-cut matter of right versus wrong. And most of these people were on the wrong side of the law that day. And in fact, I think we need to have lawmakers, we need to have lawyers and other law enforcement officials looking to see what other laws were broken, because I don't think we have a comprehensive list. I think we got one or two that are really misdemeanors, but I do believe that there are some felony activity that took place, especially stealing a government laptop. Even though that laptop is considered unclassified, when you collect the data on it and put it together, you could have a classification level that exceeds that. And so it just concerns me that we are already looking for leniency towards these individuals, and I don't want us to go there. I want us to be hard, and I want us to show these individuals and set the precedent to this country that we are not willing to accept anything like this, especially on our own government, from our own people, because they were incited by someone who was a sore loser.
And Mr. Washington, you know, you didn't mention the fact that the president was impeached as being instigated in this. So that whole article, of course, it talked about, I didn't say anything about the president, that particular article of the amendment that you were reading, but I think the president, his impeachment trial is looking at that what he did as an act of sedition.
Well, let me just say this, Brother Warren. I know what you're saying, and you're right, but I have to tell you this, but I want to make sure that not Brother Warren, but Dr. Novus had finished. Did you finish what you wanted to say, Dr. Novus?
Oh, yes, I'm done.
Okay, well, let me just say this in response to you. See, I wanted to be very careful that I did not identify an individual, because from all of the information that's coming out through the news media, which it may not turn out to be this way, because on the 8th of February, the Senate trial is going to convene for President Donald Trump, who has been charged with inciting this insurrection. However, this is not like a regular court of law. It's politically motivated, not just based on evidence and law. And so far, it looks like they're not going to be able to get the 17 Republican senators to vote to convict him. So as a result, he won't be in that category of people that it's been, quote unquote, proven that he did. Now, these other people may be charged in the district court of the United States, and because of the evidence, they probably will be convicted. So that's why I left it like that. But you're absolutely right. But let me just mention this, and I'm going to turn it over to Brother Ms. Pianchi for the wrap-up. Let me just say this. I'm retired from that position now. We may say retired. I never did get paid for it, so I'm not getting a check. But I did, you know, get an Army Public Service Medal upon my retirement in 2016. But from 2001 until the spring of 2016, I was officially in the office or the position of what I would just call volunteer chaplain, but that wasn't my role. I was given another title for the Fort Gordon Chaplain's Program as the leader for the Islamic faith. Now, at one point during my tenure in that role, we had a couple of incidents throughout the military and a couple of army bases. One happened where this major, who was a psychologist, committed a massacre at a processing center down in Fort Hood, Texas, killed several people. Then the other one was down in Pensacola at the flight school down there, where a person, I think, was a Saudi Arabian pilot trainee, killed a couple of people. Well, in both of these incidents, right after the incident happened, the commanding general of the Fort Gordon sent the chaplain who I was working directly under to talk to me to see where my mind was concerning these Muslims who had done these atrocious acts. And on one occasion, the commanding general of Fort Gordon himself came to see me. Imagine that. Because they were concerned to make sure that my head was in the right place, being that I was a Muslim and these incidents had occurred involving Muslims, and I had, because I'm retired military and I had that position also, free access to a lot of the spaces on that post. Not necessarily in the spaces where it required that my security clearance be upgraded or reactivated, but still, you know, I could go a lot of places. And I had influence over these Muslims, about 25 of them to 30 of them, and maybe more sometime, that came to my service. So, long story short, I got this call from the Defense Intelligence Agency. They wanted to interview me. Now, I'd already been interviewed by my senior officer, this colonel who was the head chaplain. I wasn't interviewed, but the commanding general came over there because he had not met me. He wanted to meet me, see what kind of person I was, what kind of fellow I was. Then all of a sudden, here comes the Defense Intelligence Agency with the Fort Gordon FBI field agent supervisor and the city of Augusta field agent supervisor. All they want to find out who I am, where my head was, because all this going on. So they asked me, and I'm bringing this to a close and a point right quick. Was I familiar with the Army's TARP program? Now I'm going to just quickly read. I'm going to summarize it. I'm not going to read everything. Under Army Regulation 381-12, which covers the Threat Awareness and Reporting Program, also known by the acronym of TARP, which was formerly known as the Subversion and Espionage Directed Against the U.S. Army, it establishes the policy and responsibilities for threat awareness and reporting in the Army. It requires Department of the Army personnel, including contractors and volunteers like myself, to report to counterintelligence any information regarding known or suspected espionage, international terrorism, sabotage, subversion, theft, or illegal diversion of military technology, et cetera, et cetera. Now, you may notice that one thing that is left out of what I just read, it doesn't say anything about domestic terrorism. Now, I don't know if this has been updated, but it says that in response to the Fort Hood incident, which I just mentioned about that major, in 2009, the Army conducted a systematic review of programs, policies, and procedures for evaluating the effectiveness of current counterintelligence and security support. Now, the whole point of what I'm trying to say is the Army, the Navy, the Coast Guard, the Marine Corps, the Air Force, and now the Space Force, and also probably even the U.S. Merchant Marine, maybe even the Public Health Service, any uniformed services of the United States government, as well as any agencies of the government, have to have a program in place to be able to get in front of not only the international terrorism, because we saw incidents where that has happened, but now just as importantly is the domestic terrorism. I think personally myself that just like they were concerned to make sure that I was on the right side of patriotism, they need to take a careful look at everybody in a leadership position, that all of what we would call in the Navy, the deck plates leaders, because we have people in the Navy that are not commissioned officers and not senior petty officers or petty officers. We got people that only been in the Navy, and I worked with some people like this 2 or 3 years, that have more influence in a 15 or 20 man division than that first class a chief petty officer may have, because he knows how and maybe has been trained how to get in the minds of the guys, and they can do a lot of damage because they got this domestic, I won't call them necessarily a terrorist, but I would say an agent provocateur that's seeking to undermine the authority of the leaders just to do something that's harmful to that particular ship or that station. We have to be very, very careful in our environments. I use the military because of my long time in the military, but we have to be very careful that we do not allow these domestic terrorists to destroy our great nation. That's my final say. So now for our closeout, I'll turn it over to Mr. Yes, sir.
I wanted to say something to Royce. Now, if you notice, when he had the inauguration and he had those National Guard troops, they was concerned about the actual National Guard troops.
Yep.
And
yep.
The FBI had to run several times the backgrounds on many of them. They did pull some out for the activity they had done in the past regarding a lot of this national stuff, white supremacist groups. But I believe because the tension is so high, one of them is going to be successful and they're going to kill somebody. And if you saw it to me with the news this week, the acting police chief for the Capitol Police is suggesting permanent fencing around the Capitol. That's just how tense it is. And they arrested some white boy, some racist white boy, they arrested this week who had a list of names of people to be killed. So I believe somebody gonna want to, some of them want to be martyrs, but somebody gonna be successful and make a successful attempt on a lawmaker's life and all that. That's these Republican conservatives. So that's how tense it is. These Republican conservatives want to be a martyr to prove that they're gonna die for the Constitution that they violate every day.
Yes, so we could continue this next week. I mean, this can be a very lengthy and important discussion about how we can protect America as we would like to see America and as the founding fathers wanted to see America, from people that have a different agenda. You know, we got a lot of neo-Nazis that are out there that would like this country to turn into what Germany was in 1939 to 1945 under Adolf Hitler. There are people that would really like to see that type of authoritarian, militaristic, freedomless, freedom denied type of society over here, and would not stop at anything to keep them from, they would not stop at anything to bring that about. So we've got to be more vigilant now. So we have seen the wolf have come out of the cave. We have seen him. So, Mr. Bianchi, I want to ask you now if anybody else doesn't have a final comment on top of what they already said.
Do you remember the Negro Labor Conference, the American Negro Labor Congress?
I don't remember. Tell us about it, please.
It existed in the 1950s. And it was part of what they was calling the Red Conspiracy, which was true. It wasn't just the conspiracy. And that's when you had the communists that was getting blacks to join on to organizations that was communist funded, like Manning Johnson, for instance. today you have some groups that's under the auspices of blacks that's meeting with communist leaders in China about ready to profess Maoism. So, yes, those things have been going on in this country, attempts on this country for a long time. That's why I'm concerned about the southern border. You don't know who's coming across that border. And also, you may have fifth columns already operating, opposed to operate in the United States.
The southern border.
You have China forces.
The threat is inside. The threat is inside.
Man, listen.
Redneck.
Why don't you shut up while
You build a reality, boy, and stop all this jockey for white folks.
You can't miss nothing you ain't never had.
We're actually doing a wrap up right now.
And
We're doing a wrap up right now, Mr. Elkin. I'm taking over. I'm taking over right now. You know, we just broke the cardinal rule about civility, and we got to stop the show now. I'm sorry for those who are listening. It's not the way I like to stop the show, but the way that we have been doing this for a while, we let everybody say what they want to say. We may not like it. We may not agree with it. We may find it very distasteful. We may even think it's false. But there's a time and a place for everything. So what we're going to do, we're going to pick this up. Ms. Pianki, I'm sorry to take over, but we're going to pick this up next Saturday. We're going to start where we left off. The last comment that was made, you were talking about this southern border. You were talking about the communists. You were talking about the external threats. And I'm going to use that to start off the topic. And what we're going to talk about, can the communist threat and the invasion, a possible invasion by foreign operators from the southern border, can these things be compared with the insurrection at the Capitol on January 6th? That's going to be the topic. I'm going to post it. And so anybody that wants to contribute, we'll pick it up next Saturday. Okay, that's a good topic. But we don't have to fight about it because that's going to be the topic for next week. And I don't want to be disrespectful to anybody, but we cannot have this infighting on this family farm show. And so I appreciate everybody for listening. I hope you'll join us. And we will pick up that topic, and we'll do it in a very civil manner on next Saturday. God bless everyone. Thank you very much. And forgive me if I seem to be, too hard on this, but I had to maintain that civility for the benefit of all our international listeners. And we do have people all over the globe that are listening. So I don't want them to get turned off because we are fighting each other on the show. So thank you all very much. Good night.